this week's Parsha, something happens which seems almost impossible. The Jews, who were so privileged, who had seen so much, they saw the plagues in Egypt, they saw the splitting of the sea, the morning that they're going to sin with the golden calf, they ate manna for breakfast, they ate mun for breakfast. Nonetheless, they go and they approach Aaron and they say to him, Moshe, the man who took them out of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. Make for us a God that will go before us. Within that one statement, we find them saying things which seem absolutely impossible. When they heard God speak at Mount Sinai, God said, I am God who took you out of Egypt. Yes, Moshe had a really important role, but ultimately it was God who took them out of Egypt. It seems to be that in their mind, in order for this sin to take place, the first thing that they're doing is they're focusing on Moshe and not on God. Moshe, the one who facilitated leaving Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. Not Moshe who took us out of Egypt. And the second of the Ten Commandments, not to make a graven image, immediately afterwards they say, make for us a graven image. According to some commentaries, they only heard those two commandments at Sinai, and the others were taught to them by Moshe. But if at least those were taught to them, those are the ones that they knew, and nonetheless they sin. And as I said, it seems impossible to us. Aaron, for his part, and perhaps one could blame Aaron for being involved for making this, Aaron does a number of things where he clearly is trying to stall them, to delay them. He tells them to go back and to ask their wives and their children for their gold. And perhaps Aaron thinks, that's it. That's going to be the end of this. Someone comes to his wife and says, oh, remember that gold thing I gave you? Remember that ring I gave you? Remember those earrings I gave you? I'd like it back. And I can just imagine what Aaron would have anticipated would have been the response. You want what? That's not happening. Nonetheless, they come back. At that point, we're told that Aaron goes into a second tactic, which seems to be delay. He says, okay, we need to melt it all down. And he melts it, and then the language changes from the individual of Aaron to the plural, and it says they meld it and they turn it into a calf. Again, Aaron delays, and he says, he builds an altar, which apparently takes some time, and then he says there will be a holiday for God, and the name of God that he uses here shouldn't leave any question or any doubt, because Aaron says tomorrow there will be a holiday for God, and he uses the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. Aaron understands that Moshe is supposed to come down any minute, any day. He'll be here. So he tries to push them off, and he tries to delay. Nonetheless, they push, and they push, and they push. And Aaron says, really correctly, tomorrow will be a holiday for God. The holiday it was supposed to be was Simchat Torah. Moshe is supposed to come down from the mountain holding the Luchot in his hands. And the people are supposed to dance and to celebrate and to sing and have complete joy. Instead, they get up early. Now, of all times, they channel their inner Avram Avinu. And they get up early in the morning. And they start to serve this golden calf. They bring burnt offerings. They bring priest offerings. They eat and they drink and they get up and they party. It was supposed to be a holiday. It was supposed to be Simchat Torah. And yet, somehow, this generation was able to ignore the word of God that perhaps they not only heard, but they saw. They ignore the first commandment, and they ignore the second commandment. And according to the rabbis in the Talmud, they may have committed murder as well when Hor perhaps tried to stop them. And Aaron puts one delay after another. Bring the gold, melt the gold, make the altar, we'll wait till tomorrow. Nonetheless, now they persevere, and now they get up early, and now they serve a golden calf. Seems absolutely impossible. Maybe there's one thing that we can look at to give us some kind of solace. Had this not happened, perhaps we would have questioned if these people had free will. They heard God speak. They heard God say these first two commandments. Perhaps their following God, their observance, would have been meaningless. Because how could you not follow God when he spoke to you? Well, there you have it. They heard God speak, and the very things that God said they didn't follow, which means all the others that did follow God, according to the numbers, only 3,000 were involved in this sin, which means all the others did nonetheless have free will. They had perhaps some kind of a desire to ignore what they saw. They had an ability of completely wiping out that memory. And they had this ability of serving something else, which tells us that all of those who did believe not because they were forced into it, at Mount Sinai, but they believed because they made a choice